Chapter 12, Turning Points, A Very Heavy Load. There's an old Bible fable about how Saul, who was a critic of Jesus, was knocked off his horse on the way to Damascus by a blinding light from the sky. He is then transformed to become the Apostle Paul. The power of the story is how the change happened in an instant. Boom! Everything is different. In real life, though, such change is very rare. While there may be that moment when, as they say, the blinding light of the obvious hits us and things change from that time forward, usually the components of change take time to build. For example, in Daniel Ellsberg's book, Secrets, a memoir of Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers, he describes both that moment of personal transformation and also what had been building up to it. In my interview with Ellsberg, he described that Saul becomes Paul moment that happened in a men's bathroom where he sank to the floor and cried for an hour. When he came out of the bathroom, everything had changed, and it became clear he had to take action. Thus, the Pentagon Papers.
For putting out the Pentagon paper, was an occasion when at the conference, as I describe in the book, when one of these young men I spoke of, Randy Keeler, announced that he was going to prison shortly, or actually his trial had not begun, but he expected to go to prison, and he did go to prison. And I was struck by it as if an axe had struck my head almost, split my life in two, really. I went to a men's room at the back of the auditorium, and a small room that people weren't using, sat down and just cried for about an hour. I cried and thought, this is what my country has come to, as I thought about when Bobby was killed. And the best thing this young man can do in his life is to go to prison. So I thought, you know, my country has come to a terrible situation, and it is worth giving my freedom. I thought I would go to prison for the rest of my life. And that's what Nixon intended for me with the charges, a possible sentence of 115 years.
Yes.
I very much unreservedly wish that I had put this information out in 1964. And I think it really could have helped prevent the Vietnam War. That's a very heavy load to bear, and I didn't see it until years later.
To me, the saddest part of this interview comes toward the end when he realizes years later he should have published the papers as early as 1964. That possibly could have helped to avoid the Vietnam War altogether. That realization for him is a very heavy load. Indeed, it would be. Terry Linkso. For Terry Linkso of Linkso Garden Supply in Redwood City, a transition happened more gently as she lay on the desert floor.
I subscribed to the Noetic Sciences, and this thing came in the mail on a vision quest, and it just seemed right, so I signed up for it, and I went with a bunch of strangers, had no idea what I was getting myself into, went out in the desert, and the first night that I laid on the desert floor in my little sleeping bag, I felt totally and completely supported by the earth. And it was a profound experience for me. And from that, the whole soil food web thing, learning that, it just all made sense. And I just, this is going to sound silly, but I sort of felt like it was all this life that was talking to me and saying, you are supported in many more ways than you realize.
Terry went on to become president of the company that her father, John Linkso, had started in the 1950s. She built it into a highly respected Bay Area company. Before she began running the company, though, her father left her with this challenge. Your mother and I are leaving on a tour of the country in our motorhome. You are in charge, Terry. Basically, sink or swim. If we come back and the company is ruined, that's okay. We'll do something else with the land. What a cool father. Taylor Eichsty. Jazz pianist Taylor Eichsty found out early in his young life that he wanted to be a musician. The turning point came when he learned he could get paid to play the piano.
My sister was a jazz and rock pianist. She passed away when I was 3. She was 17, but I got to watch her play a lot. Yeah. She had cancer, and the Doobie Brothers came to Stanford Children's Hospital when she was there, and they heard her play. She sat in with them, and then they invited her to sit in with them at Shoreline Amphitheater, and she recorded on, she played keyboards on one of their albums. They dedicated the album Cycles to her. And, but so growing up, it was kind of like this, I got to, you know, my big sister was a, I was like, well, it just seemed natural that I wanted to try to do that too. And I didn't make it a career choice until I was 8 years old when I asked my dad, my favorite pianist at the time was David Benoit. And I asked him, I was like, you know, how much does David have to pay each time he performs? And he was like, no, you get paid to do that. You can, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm a musician then, so. You know, it's definitely.
Brenda Galilee. Entrepreneur and CEO Brenda Galilee was thrust into a new life when she found her business partner, who was also her father, dead one morning before work. That turning point kick-started Brenda into a hugely successful career in Silicon Valley.
I tried real estate sales training business because my family was in real estate. My mother had become the first woman realtor in Silicon Valley. So I saw my mother go from being a farm girl to having a six-figure income in the 1960s. We were just all amazed. My father also went into real estate and was a real estate trainer. And it was at that point then in the early 80s, I go to work with my father. My father and I go on a business venture. He's going to do real estate training and I'm going to sell his services. We started that, and being the alcoholic that he was, even though he was Mormon, he was a practicing alcoholic, I needed to take care of him a great deal, being the oldest daughter. And so he didn't show up one morning. I went to his house and he had died in the middle of the night by himself, had a massive heart attack from too much drinking and not enough blood pressure pills. And my financial situation was sort of in ruins. And
must have been a hard thing. You found him?
Yes. Yeah. So it was very traumatic to have found my father. It ended up throwing me into a tailspin of no business because I had invested everything I owned in this business, but he was the trainer. So I had nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started my Silicon Valley venture.
My turning points. I've had several turning points during the course of my 45-year career. Two of the most important were when I left psychology to join Hewlett-Packard in 1980 and when I left corporate in 1985 to start my own company. Here's how I describe these huge life transitions in a recent show.
It's 1978. I'm working at Marin General Hospital in a locked psychiatric ward called the Crisis Unit. I'm a mental health worker. Saturday morning about 10. And my next patient was named Susan. Now, Susan has a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder. She's well known to the clinic.
Oh, God, I hate my life. Nobody likes me. You people don't like me around here. You're not doing me any good. It's awful. I can't take it anymore. I'm going to go to the bridge. I'm going to jump off today.
Susan, sounds like this is as bad as it's ever been. You are in a great deal of pain. There's a little voice in my head that has a different message for Susan.
Well, Susan, it looks to me like you've got me confused with somebody that gives a shit. You think you're the only one around here with problems, huh, Susan? For Christ's sake, I'm seeing a shrink myself. He's got me on meds, and I'm suicidal sometimes too. But oh, Susan, never mind my suicidal ideation. Let's talk about yours. You know, you're right about one thing, Susan. Nobody around here likes you. You've got a medical record this thick, and you're making zero progress. I have an idea. Why don't you take yourself out of the gene pool? In fact, I get off at 4 o'clock, I'll give you a ride to the goddamn bridge myself.
Now, there was another little voice that I heard, and it said, "Rick, maybe it's time for a career change." I was terrified of staying where I was, and I was terrified of changing. I had no idea what to do, but I was in a great deal of confusion and pain. And then I met an interesting person. Her name was Nancy Anderson, and she is a career coach. Now, Nancy Anderson told me that if I worked with her, she could give me a process that would help me move out of my field and into corporate. So, well, this is pretty good. She said she had friends at Hewlett-Packard, and maybe I could even get a job at Hewlett-Packard. I said, wow, okay, sounds good. You know, Nancy, this all sounds good and everything, but I don't know if it's going to work for me. You see, I don't know anything at all about business. I hate accounting. I can't even balance my checkbook. I don't know anything about technology. I don't like capitalism much. I'm not driven by money. And worst of all, Nancy, I'm a hippie psychologist from Marin County. I'm happy in a hot tub. I would never be happy in a boardroom. Now, Rick, you're just being too negative. You think your problem is that you don't like business, you're a socialist, you hate technology and all it stands for. That's not your problem, Rick. Your problem is your wardrobe. Now, Rick, I have this book I'm going to give you. It's called Dress for Success. Now, in this book, they actually show you how to dress so that you can get your corporate job. So what I want you to do, Rick, is I want you to go out and I want you to get a blue pinstripe suit, but make sure the stripes are close together. Get a red power tie and a leather briefcase. And for crying out loud, get rid of those dumb desert boots. Now, after you do all that, Rick, I want you to call Hewlett-Packard and get an annual report. Look for somebody that you can talk to in there, and I want you to go in and have what we call an informational interview. And I want you to tell them about your transferable skills. Like, for example, Rick, you can teach. You know, you get along with people. You can do therapy with schizophrenics. And let me tell you, Rick, those people at Hewlett-Packard will be a lot easier. Well, I don't know about that. So I did all of that. I went out and I got the blue pinstripe suit and the red power tie and the briefcase. Now, that was many years ago. I have no idea what happened to them. But I'm happy to tell you right here tonight, these are the actual wingtip shoes I bought 38 years ago, right there. Those babies are Florsheim Imperials wingtip shoes. Back then, they cost $100. Today, that would be worth $450. And I was working part-time as a therapist. So I was really committed to making this change. Well, to my surprise, I got the job at Hewlett-Packard. I had no idea really why they hired me. Months later, I finally figured it out. I'll bet you can figure it out too. It was, in fact, the wingtip shoes. That's what did it. But it didn't take long for me to be in corporate before I realized that the very basic and the foundation, the fundamentals of what corporate America is about is of no interest to me at all. Profit motive, return on investment, spreadsheets, Moore's Law, who gives a shit? I don't care about any of that stuff. I finally got so upset by this, I would come home at night and I would start banging on the table and saying, I've had enough of this corporate crap. I can't take it in a minute. They're sucking the blood right out of me. Because you see, every boss was my father all over again. And then once I got past him to the next level, I'd run into somebody and it would go sort of like this. Well, Rick, I reviewed the proposal you've made here, and I have to tell you, this is very creative, very unusual, not like anything we've ever done before. Me personally, I am completely behind you on this. We'll find the money. We're going to make this happen. It's beautiful. Now,
There's just one thing, Rick. There's just one thing. It's not important at all. Just a tiny little thing, not important. Don't worry about it. Tiny little thing. It's just administrivia. Don't worry about it. We're going to have to run it by legal. A little voice in my head go off. It says, we're going to have to run it by legal. You know why we're going to run it by legal? Because I'm a chicken shit. And I know that that's the end of your stupid proposal. I have an idea. Fuck legal. So it was time for me to start my own company. It was really clear, I'm done. We got a second mortgage on the house so I could get a line of credit. And on November 4th, 1985, Power Speaking was born. This little dream I had came into existence.
Moments like banging on our dining room table in frustration stand out as Saul become Paul moments in my life. The truth is that the dissatisfaction and frustration had been building long before the lightning hit. The anger and the terror of these damn the torpedoes explosive moments made these the most exciting and meaningful times in my life. I knew that from here on out, everything would be different. Turning points are like none other. Summary. Turning points come in many flavors. Dan Barker, for example, the preacher turned atheist that we met in chapter 10, started doubting when he considered the idea that maybe Adam and Eve were not real people. In his book, Losing Faith in Faith, he describes the slow process of the unraveling. People started asking him questions about religion that he couldn't answer. Finally, after about a year of this questioning, his transformation was complete. But he preached for a few more months, realizing at the same time that he was a total hypocrite. Finally, he announced his change publicly. Brenda Galilee, on the other hand, had change thrust upon her like a bad car wreck when she found her father dead and the end of her business. What is most compelling about turning points is their uniqueness. Everything is changing, sometimes slowly, sometimes fast. New places, new colleagues, new identities. For me, it was, wow, now I live in Silicon Valley. I hang out with business and engineering people. And I work for a for-profit company rather than in the public sector. The future may get better for us or not, but one thing is clear. This is a very exciting time in our lives. Whether we experience these transitions by choice or have them thrust upon us, how we survive depends on how comfortable we are with risk. This leads us to chapter 13, risk-taking.